This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. What do women want? No, I'm not talking about the movie starring Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt. I'm talking about what women want in the church. A panel discussion, part of Voices of Faith, a Vatican-sponsored storytelling event in celebration of International Women's Day this past 8th of March. Held at the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, this week's gathering was the third consecutive Voices of Faith conference, an initiative of the Fidel Goetz Foundation in partnership with Jesuit Refugee Service. Accounting for more than half of the world's 1.2 billion Catholics, women take care of 85% of the church work that clerics don't do. Yet Voices of Faith panelists said women want to contribute even more to their church, and their skills and professional experience represent a not-to-be-missed opportunity. And with new studies showing more and more women and young people leaving the church, they also want a church that is more inclusive, a church that acknowledges their achievements and contributions, a church that represents them. Well, I spoke with the multi-generational and multinational panel of women ahead of Tuesday's event. They include Geraldine Sheehan, country director for the U.S. Peace Corps in Colombia; Nicole Perron, a master's student of divinity at Yale University in the U.S.; Petra Dankova from the Czech Republic, she's a postulant with the Sisters of the Holy Redeemer; Gaya Lobo Gajiwala, an English teacher from a multi-faith family in India; and Dr. Carolyn Wu, president of Catholic Relief Services. I began by asking Dr. Wu what are some of the accomplishments that women today can offer the church.
Women have actually come a long way. 85% of the work in a church, which is not done by clerics, are done by women. And at least in the United States, a world that I know, there are many key positions held by women. They are presidents of Catholic universities, of Catholic hospital systems, of Catholic social agencies. CRS is an example. They are superintendents. They are actually chancellors. And so I think it demonstrates that, at least in the U.S., the church has engaged women and has done some power sharing. Where we need to go is to turn this from an exceptional type of experience to a more habitual process, so that it's not the extraordinary, the rare, where we do that, or just positions with the highest visibility, but that we need to make the appointments of women much more of an expectation, much more systematic and regular.
You yourself are called one of the 500 most influential people in the world today. You, as a woman, as a Catholic, what would you like to see the church do to offer more opportunities to women?
I think clearly the church needs to think about and explicitly identify decision-making bodies, whether it's within a council or whether it is within advisory boards and so on. Identify the opportunities, advisory bodies, where we could use more women. So first of all, it's just really do an inventory of where those opportunities are. So once there is that listing of opportunities, one should identify what are the experiences and skills and knowledge which are needed so that it could be systematic. And I think across the world, different bishops' conferences could be asked to start identifying women and sometimes lay men also, which have those characteristics. And in fact, in some cases, to pre-screen them so that when positions open up, it would not be difficult to find the right layperson and woman to fill that position, and also some type of tracking system so that we know whether we're really making progress or not.
You yourself have been asked by the Vatican to present the Pope's encyclical on the environment. Do you see other areas of opportunity for women here in the Vatican?
I think that there are other opportunities. I don't know enough about all the council and all the advisory boards and also the experts that people are looking for. I see that there should be many opportunities, but I also want to say we should think more of the church out in the world, not just in the Vatican, that it is a mistake to just identify the Curia as the church, as as the places with the most opportunities. I think the church has talked a lot about feminine genius, and that's wonderful. It usually evokes like sensitivity and intuitiveness and helpfulness and steadfastness, and all those are great, and actually it's daunting to just have all those characteristics. But also there's a part of women who are, for example, social activists and social critic, like Dorothy Day. Women who may be very entrepreneurial, very bold, very persistent, and even sometimes defiant, like many of the women who founded congregations to do missionary work around the world, or women who speak a truth to power, like Catherine of Siena, who wrote words urging correction by both the Pope and political leaders. So I think the feminine genius would be nice to also recognize that other part.
Sometimes in this dialogue with women, people like to introduce women's ordination. Is that putting the cart before the horse, in your view?
I think not only that, I think the Pope has spoken clearly that there will be no women's ordination. I think where the tragedy is that the conversation sometimes gets stopped right at that point. Women don't talk about other things because of that particular issue, and sometimes the church may be skeptical about women's voices out of the concern that every conversation may lead to a conversation about women's ordination. I think we should actually, in some ways, let that rest so that we could proceed on the other dimensions.
Geraldine Sheehan, meanwhile, brings with her more than 30 years of experience working with the marginalized and vulnerable. She and the other women panelists join me in studio.
I think that to be able to consider putting women in governing positions at local parishes, at the archdiocesan level, even at the global level, the curiae level, there first has to be a recognition and an understanding of what women's leadership brings to the table. If, in fact, it's done out of a should, we should be doing this, it will never really integrate. And so I think that the first thing our church needs to do is be looking to educate, recognize, and lift up, expose people to the reality of women's voices, our experience, and the distinction we bring to every topic. You know, today, whether we're talking about issues with ISIS or Boko Haram or sex trafficking, the reality is women suffer more and are targeted more as victims of those events. So as such, as we survive those, as we bring our children and families through those events, there's a strength and there's an insight that's gained from that. And it's that very voice that we need at the table at all levels. Our church, women's work oftentimes expands the church beyond the institutional structures. And so if our church is interested in remaining strong and being inclusive and expanding, we need those voices at the table to be able to, in fact, reach the unchurched and be able to be inclusive. Women have been there, and we understand that, and I think our voice brings a richness, a welcoming for others.
But in your line of work, has being a woman been an asset or an obstacle to you?
I think as women, we learn to use our gender as to move ourselves forward. So the fact is, it's always been an obstacle, but it's also a strength. And it depends on how you understand who you are. So I think making sure we raise our girls to understand our potential and the unique voice we bring. I've worked over 30 years, both domestically in the United States as well as internationally, with vulnerable populations. That means migrant groups, refugee groups, people who are displaced either from man-made disasters or natural disasters. And in those situations, many times you need the experience of having come through your own tragedies. And in my personal life, I have faced violence. And so I think sometimes that gives me a strength. Being a survivor gives you a strength to be able to relate to what's going on. I also don't ever diminish the fact that I'm an educated person and I've been prepared to lead. And so I think it's always a strength when you can bring your heart and passion, with your head for strategy, and in my case, a program design. And I think that's a combination that's needed amongst, you know, whether you're talking about civil society or NGOs or governments.
Petra, can I ask you, you're a sister in training with the Sisters of the Holy Redeemer, and you've been assisting migrants in various degrees of need in Africa and elsewhere. How has your experience led you to believe that the gifts and professional experience of women needs to be more well utilized in the church?
I think I've seen in my refugee work how different perspectives women can bring. And we have learned around the world that in things that seems to be unrelated to gender, like food distribution, it makes a lot of difference when women become engaged. We've seen that women focus more on actually feeding their families. And so it makes a difference for the whole community when they're engaged in all sectors, not just things that people automatically connect directly with women. I think it's the same in the church. I think our old church stands to benefit from the involvement of women. As you said, my background is in refugee work, and I have seen our sisters on a personal level become friends with a refugee family, and from that personal experience start working with asylum seekers in Germany as Syrian refugees started coming in, and little by little becoming the leaders just because they have first thought to open their house to asylum seekers, and then suddenly hosted 100 people at a time. And then when they saw that working, decided to provide medical help through one of the hospitals that they've run. And, you know, then people started coming to them asking for help and asking for suggestions on how to assist people who are refugees. And it's not that they looked for a position of leadership, but it was their passion for working people on the margins that brought them into this position. And I think that's really important for us to look at, is that it's not just leadership for the sake of leadership that we are talking about. It's not just moving to the top, but it's the passion that women bring to the table, passion for people who are displaced, who are on the margins, who are somehow forgotten. Because women often will have the experience of following their passion without much spotlight on it, and I think they can somehow relate to people who are in the margins, because many women will have the experience of maybe being overseen or being targeted with violence, and that personal experience can fuel their leadership.
You are embarking on a new life experience by becoming a nun. Mm-hmm. Last week we heard about a group of sisters who were mowed down by ISIS extremists in Yemen as they were caring for a group of elderly and handicapped people. Does that frighten you in any way? I mean, here you are, very courageous, also you, Geraldine, in your line of work. You're women working on the front lines a lot of times for the church.
I have worked in remote areas in refugee camp in Eastern Africa, which I think many people would consider difficult or unsafe places. But again, I think it's the passion that drives us to be with the people who are in need. And it's our faith that makes it okay for us to be in places that maybe others would question, you know, why would you put yourself in that place or in that situation? But I think informed by our faith, we go trusting in God's providence and trusting that the mission is so important that it just makes it worth it. And I think when you meet people in these places and you see how much they have lost and how often they turn right away and say, how can I help my own community? When you see that your presence there sometimes is just a sign for people that they still matter to someone, that someone cares, that someone wants to be there with them, then it makes it all worth it. And you forget about your own safety and you're just really grateful at the end of the day that you're able to be there and help, you know, hear people's stories and assist them in whichever way we are able to.
Geraldine, I saw you nodding your head there earlier.
Yeah, I can relate to it. And I pray to the Holy Spirit every day. And I think that God gave us the Holy Spirit to give us the strength and the insight. And I think that when you're in these jobs, a lot of times you really understand that we're just an instrument. And so how can we make sure that we can be the eyes and ears? That's what Christ has asked us to be. So my strength comes from that. I think about, what more do I need? If I can really turn this moment over to God, then all will be well. The other piece I think that is something that I was nodding, Petra, that I heard in your comment is that, you know, I'm always aware and I'm always influenced by the reality is that I can leave. And yet I work with the men and women in whatever country I'm working in, and they don't have that choice. And that strengthens me, and that brings me my resolve, because you gain strength from looking at the fear that they have to face. I have found in the humblest communities a strength of faith that most of us would just hope to have in our lives. And I think that's one of the reasons I don't like labeling people poor, because you'll meet people who may have limited income economically, but are some of the richest spiritually guided people in the world, that those of us that may have grown up in a more developed environment, we live in a spiritual poverty many times. A real driving force of this work also is, once you experience the living Spirit and grace of God that exists in the worst places on earth, not just in a church, but you see the living God in the faces of the people you work with, and that gives you a strength and a desire to participate and to stay and to be whatever instrument the Lord would have you be in that moment.
Gaia, you come from a multi-faith family. What strengths do women, in your experience, what can they bring to their, not only to their communities, but also to the church?
Coming from a multi-faith family taught me to look at how my mom was reacting and responding to how the church treated us as well. Because there were times when I felt like I wasn't Catholic enough, or, you know, that I wasn't the right fit, because I wasn't just Catholic, but I felt like I was Hindu as well. And it was never a question of picking one faith over the other. And I think within that space, women who come from interfaith families, they've done so much within the church to make their families and their children feel welcome. And I think that strengthens the pillars of the church, because ultimately the more people you have who have that faith, the stronger this collective spirit is. And I also know that last year in India, my mom worked with the church to instate a gender policy within the church. And I think that was so fantastic, because the bishops actually invited three women onto the board to be a part of the decision-making process. And so you have this beautiful collaboration between women and the church, which goes to show that, you know, the church is willing to listen. They are willing to let women's voices be heard. So, you know, you now have this policy, which is a model for other countries now. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, that's why we should be letting more women into leadership roles within the church.
But why was there even a need for this? Why do we need a gender policy? Mm-hmm. You're talking about India. Do we need it in the United States? Do we need something like that in Eastern Europe? Do we need it in Africa? Nicole?
I'm inclined to say that we do, because I think something we've been talking about together a lot as a group is that although it comes with a small risk of turning something into a numbers game, numbers and percentages are a very real way, a tangible way of tracking equality and progress, because it's easy to say, oh, you know, women do a lot in our organization or in our diocese or whatever, and it's sort of a vague generic when you say it like that. But if you can, you know, tangibly mm-hmm. say on every parish council, the division is 50-50, and here's the statistics to back that up. I think that, in my opinion, especially in the United States, would go a lot farther because there's evidence to back it up instead of a theoretical back and forth with people who have varying perspectives on the issue of women in the church.
Mm-hmm. Gaia, you wanted to add something there.
No, I just wanted to say that I absolutely agree with her. And I think that you need this policy just because a lot of what we say is up in the air and there's no way of tracking what actually happens. Mm-hmm. And also just by putting these numbers out there and by telling people that now we have a policy, you're also making people who weren't aware that there was even a problem in the first place, you're making them aware that there might have been something that wasn't right. So I think for the longest time, people just thought that men and women did have equal roles in the church because they were like, well, you have priests, so you also have nuns, so what are you complaining about? What is the problem? Mm-hmm. And so this is a way for lay people also to understand that they can be a part of the church, lay women specifically, that there is a space for them within the church to make a contribution, a meaningful contribution.
You know, Tracy, yesterday when we were talking about this with Father Tom, I'm sorry he's not with us today, he mentioned something, and I can't quote wherever the fact came from, but he mentioned that the last few years now, and I don't know if it's a decade or less, that women have been leaving the church, mm. right?
Pew study. Yeah.
And so it was at Pew study? Okay. And, you know, if that's a fact, that should be of huge concern to our entire governing structure of the church, because we also have talked, all of us, about the role of mothers in passing on faith, that in fact most of us can relate our faith back to a grandmother, a mother, you know, maybe a nun as a teacher, whatever. But the fact is women are the heart of the home, and that's global. That's around the world. Barring no culture is different from that. And so part of the home, and we all gain our faith from the home first, right? And then we grow and become mature in our faith outside of the home. But the seed has to be planted in the home. So think about it. If we have women leaving our church, that means our church in itself is going to suffer. So again, I think this isn't a, you know, saying to the cardinals, you should be doing this. But it's really looking at the reality of our church and, you know, what is the body of Christ? And it is those women, the heart of the home, that grow and nurture church. And so when we can't see ourselves in the infrastructure, that's going to impact us. And so we really, you know, so if a gender policy helps us get our head right, and be looking at some common goals for inclusion, for decision-making, for voice. You know, those are all good things yeah. that benefit everyone.
Why are women leaving the church and young people?
Why are women and young people leaving the church? I think there's a long list, but yes. really I think at the heart of it, when people are committing, people in general, commit their life, their time, their talents, their energy, their financial resources, their families and the life of their families to something, they want to know that they are valued in whatever that structure is. And I think sometimes there's the tendency of the church to make those two particular populations that you just named, women and young people, intentionally or not, mostly unintentionally. I don't think the church, you know, the major hierarchy of the church mm-hmm. wakes up and says, I think today will make people feel unwelcome. In fact, I think generally the intent is quite the opposite. But there's that cultural thing that exists that implicitly says, not you. Not in this way. Not in quite the same way. There's a line, a separate but equal. And mm-hmm. especially for young people, mm-hmm. we've discussed this.
Yes.
You know, we have talked these points, mm-hmm. you know, so much because I really think it was heartening for all of us to come together and agree on this, that young people, especially young women, which is sort of the intersection that I worry the most about in the church, can do anything. And I think you mentioned this as well. In 2016, especially in the developed world, young women can do anything. They can aspire to be the head of their respective country. They can go to space. They could be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. And then when you're told in an institution that your gifts and talents don't need to be utilized here, I can see why you would leave. I understand how people get there. I do. And I think women would feel the same way. If you feel like you have poured your energy into really fostering and nurturing a faith and loving the church and committing your family to it, as Geraldine said so well, that disconnect can be really hurtful and impactful, I think.
Okay, so where are we now? We've got problems. We'd like to see more women in positions of responsibility, not only in the church, but elsewhere. What do we do about it?
We have thought this through. Well, first, I think I'd like to say, and everyone else feel free to comment on this as well, that we don't want to make this seem punitive toward the church, but really that this is a great opportunity. I think by naming the situation the church is in with women is not a, you know, stern shaking of the finger and a reprimand, but saying, you have such a great opportunity right now to utilize the talents and resources of demographics that maybe you haven't cracked open in the way that you could. You know, the church is only doing itself a disservice by not meaningfully engaging the gifts that women bring. And so we say these things, all the creative solutions we have come up with that I imagine we will all share, because we love the church and want it to be better, not because we want to disengage with the church or want to punish it in any sort of way, but that we want to see it be better. And I think that's why women stay in the church, because they do believe in something there and want that institution to grow.
Petra?
You know, just because I'm freshly entering religious life, a lot of my thinking goes back to this amazing tradition of women being active in the church. And it seems to me it's almost like, you know, women religious have been the greenhouses of the church for women leadership, and not just them, but also the lay people who have been part of their ministries. And so I think, you know, what is the essence of this? Because I think the answer is not necessarily having more women religious, but to really distill the essentials of this life and see how they can apply to the wider church. You know, I think of the process of formation as one of the hallmarks. It's growing in depth in spirituality, it's education, it's also this practical ministerial experience that women gain, which all together really build strong leaders. So, you know, maybe one of the ways to apply it to the church beyond just women religious would be to think of fellowships for women. So maybe women who work in the field could be invited to gain experience in the hierarchy of the church, in the structures, bring their experience, bring their unique points of view, but also learn how the structure works and, you know, become part of teams on the level of diocese or even in the Vatican, and have this cross-pollination of ideas, but also make it, you know, a part of the everyday that there are women in all these places. Women have so many opportunities these days. And so I would like to think the ball is actually in the court of the church. The church should now try to make this appealing to women and to really try to attract the best of the best, the you know, the way good companies do, and to really work on utilizing this great resource that for now has gone unnoticed by the hierarchy of the church.
Okay, Gaia, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, you know, I work in the education space, and I think when we're looking at women's roles in the church, as Geraldine pointed out, you're also looking at women and children, because they sort of come as a package deal. And I mean, they do.
It's true, it's wonderful.
And when, so, you know, the children are the future of our church. And even if you do create spaces for women to showcase their leadership skills within the church, very often, not enough women will volunteer or will take up these positions because they don't see themselves as leaders, because they were never taught to see themselves as leaders. And one of the ways that we need to do that is to, you know, solve this problem on a very basic grassroots level. And I'm looking at Catholic schools, I'm looking at Sunday school, I'm looking at what you teach children from a very early age, where, you know, along with Bible studies, you could also teach, you know, throw in some basic theology, throw, you know, just get them to start questioning, to start thinking, to really get to the root of their faith, because I think questioning only makes your faith stronger. I may have said that earlier. And also, from a very young age, they then start to see men and women as equal within the church. So these are the young boys and girls, young women, who are going to then grow up and aspire to leadership positions within the church, because they will never have been in a situation where they thought that they couldn't be a part of the existing structure.
Okay, we're running out of time. Geraldine, I'll leave the last word for you.
Well, I love what everything... I think actually Petra was suggesting that the Vatican needs to get a headhunter. Really, with the incredible talent out there of women, they've got to get in the game and compete for the best of the best, right? Mm-hmm. And keep the institution fresh and growing and expanding. The other thing I'll just say, just a simple idea that I think would be very doable. It would be great if in every seminary around the world, that before someone graduated, they took at least one women's study course. Mm-hmm. Because women are influencing not just in the church, but in civil society, in business, around the world. And I think, imagine if every seminarian left seminary understanding the particular values, skill sets, contribution, and history of women in civil society, in government, in business, etc. It would just bring that young priest out understanding more about what he's going to draw on in his own work life. And so I think that could be transformative just to add that in as a course.
Okay, well, thank you, and thank you to all of my guests here today for joining me. We've been talking with Geraldine Sheehan, Country Director for the U.S. Peace Corps in Colombia, Petra Dankova, Apostolate Nun in Training of the Sisters of the Holy Redeemer in the Czech Republic, Gaia, sorry if I can't pronounce your last name, Lobo Gajiwala. Oh, I got it. An English teacher in India, and Nicole Perrone, a Master's Student of Divinity at Yale University in the USA. So thank you all very much for being here on Vatican Radio.
Thank you, Tracy. A pleasure.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.